Now, long-awaited legislation that will allow for the excavation of remains at the sites of former mother and baby institutions has been signed into law by President Michael D. Higgins. The Institutional Burials Bill 2022 passed its final stage in the Oireachtas last Thursday and is now law. The legislation will allow for remains at sites at such as the former mother and baby home in Tuam to be excavated, recovered, analysed and finally given a formal burial. Well, on the line now has been a regular contributor to our programme over the last number of years, Breda Murphy, the PRO of the Tuam Mother and Baby Home Alliance. Good to talk to you again, Breda. Welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Owen.
Your initial reaction to this news then? I know there's quite a lot of details behind it and you do have some questions that you want answered, but ultimately a good news story?
Well, we have to say it's a good news story, but in essence, there was no need for any legislation if the children were treated equally as to every citizen in the state. And when the state itself discovered 5 years ago that the children, the remains found within 17 of the chambers, there are 20 chambers underground, that those remains dated to the period of the home, well, then if the state had moved to protect the site, we would have known that there were serious about excavation, and if at that point they also began the process of DNA extraction from the people who are related to the children that are missing, some of whom are now deceased within that intervening 5 year period, then we would know that the state was certainly serious about doing right by the children that are lost within Tuam and within many more sites. Now, you did speak earlier about the intervention on other burial sites, and while it's a bespoke legislation, it is particular to Tuam for the moment. I will be very surprised if any other institution within Ireland, if any other ground, is equally given the same recognition and significance by state and that they do the same works there.
Hmm. I know survivors and relatives have expressed concerns that other sites may not be excavated for several years, if at all, but they also won't be excavated until the process at Tuam is complete or at least well underway.
That's right, and we do not have a timeline. What we have all the time are aspirations, and, you know, the minister will say that hopefully this will happen within, a short period, 6 months or so, that excavation will begin on the site. But before that happens, there is the certain roles of director of the advisory board of certain people that they've put in place. But I would always maintain that had the coroner been given the proper jurisdiction at the point when 796 children were missing, which was 8 years ago, or certainly at the point when the religious order maintained that below ground were actually crypts where the children were laid to rest respectfully, and the state had to go and dig into that and see exactly what was meant. And of course, they found that the 20 chambers were actually related to a sewage system, and that 17 of those, the remains are contained within 17 of those. And likewise, the religious order in question, who made that remark that indeed there were crypts and employed various specialists to make that allegation, then they, at the same time, while those children were being disposed of, never buried, they buried their own sisters within the grounds with proper ceremony, and they reinterred them in Knock at the Holy Shrine sometime later on when they were leaving the site. So, you know, there are so many questions related to this, but the big, big question is the role of coroner and the absolute necessity for families to learn what happened to their loved ones.
You touched on it there, Breda, and, you know, just to give the backstory, and people will be very, very familiar, but the Commission of Investigation into Mother and Baby Homes was set up following claims that 796 babies were interred in an unmarked mass grave at the former institution in Tuam. This was, of course, following research carried out by local historian Catherine Corliss. Excavations were carried out between November 2016 and February 2017, found a significant quantity of human remains interred in a vault on the site. Anna Corrigan, who's one of your colleagues at the Tuam Babies Family Group, has said that particular site needs to be urgently excavated as families have waited long enough for answers. She's quoted as saying in the journal that they started digging in 2016 and 2017. They should have kept going then. It could have been resolved at this stage. Now, while President Michael D. Higgins has signed this burials bill into law, it's not just a case now of go and excavate the site. Agencies have to be set up, staff has to come in, and Anna Corrigan raising the point there, this could take years.
It will certainly take years. It's not that it could. It will certainly take years to get any resolution. But the real urgency is for those, including one of our members. Well, there are many members, but some are not included at all, who are cousins of the children who are missing for a long time. They've included, for instance, grandnephews and grandnieces most recently, grandparents. The children did not live themselves to become a grandparent. They do not have children of their own. So many times we are reliant on extended family members, including cousins. And I know that cousins can be matched, because I am matched to two lost members of our own family, one in Perth now in her 70s, the other living in Wexford, who's almost in his 90s, that we did not know about. And we are cousins. We are not their grandchildren. So I would urge the government to look, and we've asked for this many, many times. It was debated, and the minister has said, well, you know, at some stage they may be included, but right now they are not including cousins, and they are saying, if you want to have your own DNA taken privately, go ahead and do that. But then there's no guarantee that they will use that DNA in time to come when the person has passed away. And if we and our members are willing right now to give that DNA securely to government for matching purposes, maybe 5 years down the line, why will they not take it? That they haven't taken it from anybody. Not from anybody. They will say that they have not set up the structures, but it is really questionable as to why, over the last 5 years at least, they did not set up that. So, you know, there are real misgivings and real concerns as to how this will play out ultimately. Right. Certainly Tuam is to be excavated, but what about the mothers who are missing from Besborough? There are 19 unaccounted for there. There are almost 1,000 children unaccounted for. There is Shanross Abbey, where children from Kildare were placed. There are almost 1,000 children again missing there. We do not know where they are. And the key driver to this, in order to excavate, is manifestly inappropriate burials. So who says they are manifestly inappropriately buried until we find out, with all of the ground penetrating radar, which hasn't been conducted on these sites? A little bit has in Shanross Abbey, but not on the entire site, and we do not know where the remains are, and we're the same way with Besborough. So each time we speak, even though we may be speaking for Tuam, we're speaking for all the other sites around Ireland. And into the future, this legislation will outlive you and I and everybody listening. So it will be there for generations to come. In the event that there is a war or something happens here, this is the type of legislation that will then look at mass grave scenarios.
Let's talk about the bill once again, Breida, on that point, because I know you touched on the DNA-based identification, and this bill will allow that. I know that there are some, you know, issues with that and family representatives raising that, but also in the pre-legislative scrutiny there were recommendations there and concerns expressed by family representatives. Children's Minister Roderick O'Gorman made a number of changes to the bill, but what exactly does this bill allow, or what's going to happen now?
What's going to happen is initially the director will be appointed. The advisory board will be appointed. The site will be sealed. The site in Tuam, it extends to the entire site. So I expect that the playground area will also be sealed. Last time they did test excavations, they did them only on the memorial garden. We do know that there are coffined remains within the playground area of the site. There are children's playground items right on top of burials, which, you know, is inappropriate, absolutely. In fact, that too should have been looked at many years ago when they found out that children's remains were there. And then this is a process that will continue. The director is to report the minister. The minister still of the day, who maybe, you know, Minister O'Gorman will have retired by the time much of this happens. Then the minister of the day has jurisdiction as well as the director. So the director will constantly report. There is a point at where too the surviving family members, as identified by the director under the criteria, which can be niece or nephew or whatever, grandparent, that they will be informed and they will nominate somebody to have information taken to them as things unfold. But what about all of the others, you know, the children, where they find, then they will find that some they may not be able to take DNA from, precisely because, as Dr. Niamh McCullough, who was the test excavator in charge at the time in 2016 and 17, she said that that site must, in order to be able to retrieve the DNA from the area that they had excavated, must be reinvestigated within a 6-month period. Otherwise, the DNA would prove worthless or that they would not be able to work with it. That is now 5 years ago. So the reality being that much of what was excavated before may not yield any results for those who are looking for their loved ones to be returned. And we have people within our group whose children, whose family members are missing from Tuam, but without a death certificate, while they would have had a birth certificate, which again was signed, and death certificates were signed by a domestic in the home, not medically signed. But in this case, we do not have a death certificate. So that often suggests that the child may well have been trafficked. She was one of a twin. Her twin sister is still alive. And we are hopeful that at some stage, DNA will prove that she actually survived, because nobody wants to think of their child or their loved one being in a sewage, an area that contained raw sewage at a time, and still maintained there, still kept there, while the religious order have attempted to suggest that those were crypts. And that is why, if anybody listening wants to find out about this, the fifth interim report actually has photographs of the chambers, of what was located, including the artefacts that would have been, you know, thrown in at the time of disposal, including shoes belonging to the child. You know, they weren't all little babies. Some were children that are missing from Tuam. Some are mothers, indeed, as yet, that we do not know about. And, you know, the trafficking that went on, that is one of the issues that we may never truly find out about. And another issue, Owen, is the anatomical research and the stillborn deaths from Tuam and from other institutions, where the porters in hospitals or in facilities were paid for the handing of children to the anatomical research universities. They were paid per child. So they did that per child's remains. So they did that to supplement their income, obviously, and without due regard. Nobody, absolutely nobody, regarded these children as worthwhile at that time. And I think there's a really good quote on that, which says that the idea that some lives matter less is the root of all that is wrong with the world. And that was said by Paul Farmer. And that is exactly true in this case. Yeah. If the lives of these children mattered at that time, inquests would have, people would have asked questions as to why did they die at such an alarming rate from illnesses, which in the community, and those were dedicated mother and baby homes with nursing sisters. And in the community, when my aunt passed away in 1933, my grandfather saw that she was buried appropriately in a coffin. He walked himself with my dad, aged 4, to the site of her burial. Why could not the religious orders do the same when they were getting funds from Galway County Council and within a short distance of where I live, to do exactly the same thing for those children? Why did they not bury them appropriately? And why are we dealing with this, you know, in 2022, some 70, 80 years on?
Yeah, it's utterly shocking. And there are a lot of unanswered questions here. And primarily it will be while this Tuam Mother and Baby Home site is to be excavated after the signing of the burials bill into law. Questions being raised as to whether we'll see it happen in other sites, as you mentioned, Bessborough, Shanross Abbey and so forth. But this legislation will allow for remains at sites, particularly at Tuam, to be excavated, recovered, analysed and given a formal burial. We'll keep on top of it as always. Breda Murphy, you're always very good with your time to us here on Kildare today. Much appreciated. Tuam Mother and Baby Homes Alliance PRO, Breda Murphy. Thanks, Breda.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. Whitewatersc.ie.
Ciara Noble and Owen Beattie here with you on air until 11 a.m. this morning. And do get in contact, of course, if you'd like to speak with us. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 or call 045 898 999. Now, domestic violence, unfortunately, remains alarmingly prevalent across Ireland, affecting both men and women. And this morning I'm speaking with the Chief Executive of Men's Aid. That is Katrina Bentley. Hello to you, Katrina.
Good morning, Ciara. How are you doing?
So you have just published your mid-year impact. This is from January to June, the first 6 months of 2022, and demand and response has increased for your service at this midpoint in the year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. The statistics and the data that we're releasing today, Ciara, is this year compared to 2021 last year. Unfortunately, and fortunately, there's a positive and a negative to it, but we have responded to an increase of 36% year on year. So I suppose the pandemic certainly brought put a spotlight on domestic violence for both men and women and families across Ireland who are living in fear, walking on eggshells, where their home was not safe. And the impact is continuing into 2022 as lockdown obviously lifted. Mm-hmm. What's happening now is actually it is increasing because people are out and about. And I suppose, given the fact that the prevalence is so high and the underreporting is still a concern, the only way, I suppose, that this is going to be continuing as a trend, I suppose, is that we can only envisage that it will continue to increase.
Yeah, and I spoke about this before with, Nolene Blackwell from the Dublin Rape mm-hmm. Crisis Centre yeah. to Women's Aid, Sarah Benson, etc. And it is funny, the two words can be so easily used. It is unfortunately unfortunate, because even right. though the numbers are rising, it does mean that people are reaching out for help, Katrina, and there Absolutely. Always is the silent sufferers in any area of society with mm-hmm. any particular issue.
Absolutely. I suppose, you know, the research that Ireland has goes back to COSC back in 2005, whereby in terms of the reporting, only 5% of men and only 30% of women. So therefore, you know, 95% of men and 70% of women were not reporting. So what if we would take the positive is that people are coming forward, because we're breaking down the silence, we're breaking down the shame, we're breaking down the stigma, and people are picking up the phone and speaking to any of our colleagues on helplines.
And Katrina, you know, when people in their family. You know, when people do get in touch, mm-hmm. they're obviously in a distressed state, but is it ever asked as to why would say this man now feels the courage to come forward and speak about his experience? Like, what is the reasoning that gives them that strength?
Mm-hmm. First and foremost, radio shows like this, Ciara, I've put the team on alert. They're aware that we're on air today. So mums and dads and parents and individuals will contact us today, and grandparents will contact us today, because today conversation. So even by having the conversation across the media, definitely gives the confidence and the encouragement to any person to pick up the phone. I suppose you're correct as well, what you mentioned there, when they do ring us, they're in a state of trauma. They're in a state of what we call in the fog. Perhaps it's gone on for 6 months to 6 years. Some of our clients are in their mid-80s, so you're talking decades of abuse. And we recognise very much how difficult it is to pick up that phone and to make that call. So I suppose the important thing to say is you can pick up the phone as many times. You know what I mean? It's not just one call only, that we're always there at the end of the phone, and that we recognise how difficult it is. But our team are all qualified, they're all experienced professionals in the area of domestic violence, coercive control, family law, domestic violence, the legal orders, access, custody, guardianship, all of that, and especially around the emotional, the psychological, the coercive behaviours, you know, talking about those things that's hard to put words on, those behaviours, you know, the humiliation.
Yes. Yeah.
The
emotional abuse, I guess.
The emotional, the mental health side of us, definitely. We have a lot of mental health issues and calls in relation to that impact. A lot of men will say to us after, at the end of the, towards the end of the phone call, well, you know, when we say, has there been physical violence, is there anything else? And say, well, she's only hit me or slapped me a couple of times. I can handle that. But it's actually my head. She's wrecking my head. So the mental health, feeling no good, feeling like a useless father, being told day in and day out, being ridiculed, you know, and that sort of thing.
I want to give out the number for the National Helpline here, just as we're in the middle of the conversation. Katrina, it's 01554 3811. I will give it out again towards the end of the show. You noted, you know, the age range varies in terms of people reaching out for help. Is it often that, would say someone listening today, they're thinking to themselves, I definitely know in my heart that my loved one, my relation, my son, whatever it may be, is suffering from coercive control, you know, physical abuse, psychological abuse. Yeah. I want to get them help. Do they have the ability to get in contact with the helpline?
Absolutely.
And how does that work? Because, you know, you hear it all the time, you know, you can't make anyone help themselves, if that makes sense.
No, but the thing we can do is we can give the information and empower the mum or the dad or the grandparent or the brother or the sister. Or now that we're more, there's more people back in the workplace, there's a lot more calls coming from our work family, so our work colleagues as well. So to if they give us a call, we will certainly talk through options, what's happening. Now, the best thing obviously for them they have to do is pass on the phone number for the individual who's experiencing domestic violence or coercive control. They do need to make the phone call as well. But absolutely, in terms of being concerned about a loved one, or do you want to talk through the behaviours that you're seeing? If you're questioning, is it domestic violence? Is this emotional? Is this psychological? Is this coercive? Pick up the phone and ask us. No problem. Absolutely. Yeah, and that can be the first step as well. Because sometimes when you go for the coffee and you can just say to your friend, if you know that there is a friend in distress or that they're not in a healthy relationship and things are not going well, the best thing to say to them is, if there's anything I can do, I'm here anytime. I'm here for if there's any way I can
support.
Help you. And I have a phone number, and if you need it, I have it, or if I can pass it to you, or when it's safe to do so, you can come to my kitchen anytime and make a call.
Katrina, I just want to note something in particular that was published by yourselves this morning. You say about the mid-year impact from January to June, what's very evident is the growing demand on your team at Men's Aid. How is the team coping with that? Because a growing demand means a demand on those who are giving help that they also will be under, pressure themselves.
Yeah, we're a tiny team. There's only three of us full-time and the rest are part-time.
So how do you deal with that?
The team are terrific, Kira. They do their role out of passion and commitment. And I suppose they're just so committed to helping the dads. I suppose that's what drives them, first and foremost. Secondly, we all check in on each other daily, every second day, daily. We have a program ourselves in relation to our own self-care. And we're supervised as well because, you know, dealing with up to about 200 dads or men a week takes a toll on ourselves. Obviously, it's vicarious trauma. We're all supervised as well. And we all get together as well as a team.
Katrina, if people want to reach out and donate, can they do so?
We'd love any support at all. That would be terrific.
How can they do so?
Website is mensaid.ie. And there's a donation button there.
So okay. So this is the mid-year impact. I just want to briefly go through the main points here. 50 mm-hmm. nationalities supported. A sample, this is from 153 face-to-face appointments, shows 98% female on male abuse, 59% emotional abuse was disclosed, 41% disclosed physical abuse, 21% coercive control, 14% psychological, 9% economic, and 1% sexual. And the National Helpline for Men's Aid 01-554-3811. January to June 2021, there were 3,449 contacts. And as Katrina pointed out, in January to June of 2022, 4,703 contacts. That is an increase of 36% year on year. Thank you very much to the Chief Executive of Men's Aid. Again, that national helpline, Owen, before we go back to you, 01-554-3811.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Yeah, let's go back to the Naas Municipal District then once again. And joining me now is Green Party Councillor and the newly elected Lasca Hearlock of the Naas MD, Councillor Colm Kenny. Good morning, Colm, and welcome to the programme and congratulations on the appointment.
Thanks very much, Owen. Flattered now by that appointment. Absolutely delighted. And, you know, looking forward to working together with Evie Salmon, our Mayor, the other council members and with council staff to bring about progress in the municipal area for the coming year.
Absolutely, good stuff. And indeed, we spoke to Councillor Evie Salmon yesterday on the programme about her appointment as the Cathaoirleach. So the very best of luck to yourself and Evie for the coming year. Motions that you brought forward to the meeting the other day, and first of all, you wanted the council to confirm if it plans to liaise with the NTA and the current and or other bus route providers to review the decision on the local bus routes proposed to be cancelled, including the 737 Naas to Dublin City and Dublin Airport, and the 846 Clane to Naas, and the 129 Kilcullen to Newbridge. It's used indirectly as well by people coming to Naas Hospital. So what response did you get there?
The short answer is that the council does plan to write to the National Transport Authority and to liaise with the bus operators to request a review of the decision to cancel the routes. Now, look, the bigger picture is, you know, on social media, there has been a lot of commentary about this, the loss of the bus routes. Now, I believe there is maybe some reinstatement of the Kilcullen to Newbridge route. But, you know, at the moment, okay, so these bus operators, the fuel costs are rising for them. They may be under pressure, their services may be under pressure, but, like, you know, the same then applies, instead of losing these routes, the same, you know, applies to the public, where maybe there should be less private cars and more people being driven, if I can use that expression, to use buses and to use public transport. And also recently, you know, several of us have different motions about upgrading of bus shelters in the Naas Municipal District. So, like, if we're going to upgrade infrastructure, then we need a bus service to be there to facilitate.
Absolutely. I had another question as well relating to an area not too far from us here in the M7 Business Park, Colm. Just explain to us what you meant by the question. You wanted the council to confirm if it plans to designate sections of the 3 metre wide trackway extending to 500 metres in length. Now, this is all around the closed up M7 off ramp just across the road from us here in the M7 Business Park.
Correct, Owen. So look, on the Newbridge Road, on the R445, out near the Aldi Logistics Centre, where we still see those trucks turning out onto the main Newbridge Road. Along there is all in, and around the Chickenstown, the new Chickenstown Manor as well, there is about 500 metres long of footpath and pathway, which could be designated as a shared space for active travel. So that's both for cycling and walking. And indeed, it seems to me that it's staff, people going out to do work in the logistics centre, maybe people going out as far as you, the M7 Business Park, on bicycles or e-scooters, that are using this. And all I'm asking for is that this pathway, which is 3 metres wide, so that's sufficient for a shared active travel route, would be designated as such. So look, the response there is very positive from the Sustainable Transport team, that a number of the routes are being upgraded and looked at. We got a presentation on the Craddockstown Road and the Kilcullen Road on Tuesday at our meeting as well. So the report back is positive that this will be taken into account over time with the Sustainable Transport team.
Okay, you also wanted the council to advise on the status of Part 8 upgrade scheme for Corbin's Lane. This was approved in 2007 and you wanted information on that.
We're all well aware of the, you know, the hiatus there with the Nace Shopping Centre. It stood idle there for many years. So, you know, the bigger picture here, again, is that there was a Part 8 approved for St Corbin's Lane, for Murta's Corner and the Sarah Flood site, right down to Friary Road. This was approved many years ago. We'd like to see movement on this, that, you know, there's two schools on that road, and any development for those schools or any progress for those schools is somewhat dependent on St Corbin's Lane, working on St Corbin's Lane being upgraded for walking and cycling. There'll be a lot of pedestrians, a lot of cyclists going to the schools. You know, this was all part of the conditions, the bigger picture on the Nace Shopping Centre itself. And like, well, we know there is an issue with the Bank of Ireland, the facade on the main street. It was described at the meeting there on Tuesday. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. So, you know, just because there's one piece of the jigsaw puzzle that we can't work out or we can't fix, can the other pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, Murta's Corner, Sarah Floods, the junction there, St Corbin's Lane, right down to Friary Road, you know, and a car park that's meant to be provided as well. Can progress be made on this? You know, we'd like to see the council working with and the developer moving forward on this.
And also, Colin, just before we finish up then as well, there seems to be an issue with sewage odours emanating at several points along the inner Rathaska Road, particularly between the St Conleth's estate and the new Whitethorn estate as well. What can you tell us about that?
So look, the Rathaska Road, you know, an oldish, you know, it was a road, then it was bisected by the South Ring Road here in Nace, and so it's turned more into a sort of a more quieter walking route with less vehicular traffic. And, you know, people living there, residents along there, anywhere from St Conleth's, Rathaska Court, and now sadly right up as far as the new Whitethorn estate, which backs onto Rathaska Road. There is, unfortunately, odours. About 6 weeks ago, there was visibly sewage running on the road. Now, there was a rapid reaction from, you know, it was after 5 o'clock, rapid reaction. I'm very impressed by contact council officials, and they followed up on it. I'm disappointed in the actual answer that I'm getting, in that it's really to liaise with Irish Water, and I think, you know, we need to bring the multiple issues, it seems, along the Rathaska Road to the attention of Irish Water, and that they might address it.
Okay, do we have any idea as to why there's sewage emanating on the roads? Is there a blockage there? I'm assuming there is, but is there any indication that Irish Water are going to come out, or that this is going to be dealt with?
There's multiple points. There is a manhole which local residents have pointed out near the back of St Conleth's, which may be a culprit. Then further up, there's a point near Rathaska Court, which, like I say, I actually visibly saw this myself, that there was a flow of sewage on the road there a couple of weeks ago. This odour now that has been noticed up near Whitethorn, where it backs onto the Rathaska Road. Maybe the layout or the design of where this sewage system, the pipes are, you've got maybe a slope, a hill from St Michael's Terrace and Rathasker, the Esker, the Rath on the Esker. So that's an Esker, a higher ground flowing down into, you know, a lower point where the road is. And maybe it's all culminating, plus extra load from new estates, maybe just culminating in a bigger issue. But until we really get Irish Water in on the scene, we don't have any short answers.
Okay, you might keep us updated on that if you would, but for the moment we'll leave it there. That is Green Party councillor on the Nace Municipal District, Colm Kenny. Thanks for joining us, Colm.
Oh, and thanks very much.
Have your say now. Text or WhatsApp Kildare today on 0833 97 97 97. KFM.
All right, and just to catch up then on some of the messages this morning, going back to the conversation that we had regarding drugs, Dr. Garrett McGovern, GP specialising in addiction medicine, he told the Oireachtas Justice Committee that drugs such as cannabis should be decriminalised in order to help people and support people who might be suffering with addiction. And a listener in a certain area of the county, which I won't mention, saying that that area in particular needs support when it comes to clampdown on drugs. Another one here from Trish Proctor in Castle Dermot. Morning to you, Trish. Listening to that interview with that lady is heartbreaking. She's a wonderful lady, has taken the sunshine out of the day. What a sad day for those families and a sad day for our country. I'm assuming you're talking about Breda Murphy, the PRO of the Tuam Mother and Baby Homes Alliance. And it is, it's absolutely heartbreaking and shocking. Every time we have conversations about those mother and baby homes, it just brings it back into light. But hopefully now with the signing of the burials bill into law from President Michael D. Higgins, those families will be able to have a dignified ceremony for those babies who were disposed of in the Tuam Mother and Baby Homes the site. But as Breda said, it only covers that site at the moment, and that's the only area that's going to be excavated. And she's asking the question, why not Shanross Abbey, where a lot of Kildare babies have been buried, and also in Bessborough down in Cork as well. Rita in Strafford says, I wish there was a bus link on the Boreen Road in Strafford. I would sell my car and hop on a bus. And I think that is replicated by many listeners around the county, particularly in rural areas such as Suncroft, people have been in touch with us about, and also in Crookstown, the lack of a bus link serving those particular areas. All right, let's go to the sport then, because tonight there are two games in the Tom Cross Transport Junior Football Championship in Group 2, Round 2. Rebben play Ardclough in Mangard Plus Hawkfield on pitch 2 at 7:30, while at 8 on pitch 1 it's Kildangan against Kappa. But the Kildare under 16 girls team are All-Ireland B champions. They beat Tipperary 3-11 to 1-8 last night in Cressyard GAA. Tara Byrne was at the game for us yesterday evening, and she has this report.
Three second-half goals ensured Kildare overcame Tipperary in the under-16B All-Ireland Championship final in Cressyard. It was Kildare who came out final victors on a scoreline of 3 goals and 11 points to Tipperary's 1 goal and 7. It was 7 first half points from the boot of Ciara O'Hara that ensured Tipperary held a 3-point advantage at the break. Kildare responding with 2 frees and 2 points from play, all coming from the boot of Tara Rafferty. On the restart, it was Caoimhe Egan who changed Kildare's fortunes with 2 quick points on 31 and 34 minutes to bring them within 1 of their opponents. Rafferty netted on 35 minutes after a ball from Caoimhe Egan left her on the 14-yard line with only Chloe Shorley to beat. This sent Kildare into the advantage for the first time in the tie on 35 minutes. Kildare built on this with further point from Abby Whelan to ensure that they went a goal clear of their opponents with just over 20 minutes remaining. Tipperary were not to be quelled at this point, and a goal from Ciara Shelley ensured to level matters once again as we headed towards the three-quarter hour mark. Kildare took control from here on in, and with Aoife Mernon pointing on 53 minutes, she soon found a back of Chloe Shorley's net. Shorley's kick out finding its way straight to the hands of Mernon, she rounded the keeper to net to send Kildare 2-8 to 1-7 ahead. A further goal from Mernon, followed by points from Caoimhe Egan, Abby Whelan and Emma Walsh, rounded off the day's scoring, leaving Kildare holding a handsome advantage, 3-11 to 1-7. At the death, Kildare did have an opportunity to extend this further, with Laura Dunlea seeing her penalty saved by Shorley after Saoirse Mahon was fouled by Shorley as she looked to net Kildare's fourth of the afternoon. But that done little to change the scoreline, and Kildare did go on to lift the trophy in Cressyard on a handsome victory of 3 goals and 11 points to Tipperary's 1 goal and 7.
And let's hear now from the manager, Pat Travers, speaking to Tara after the game.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. It was a terrific game. Tipperary owned the first half, 3 points up at halftime, and our girls were calm enough at halftime, and they really dug deep. And, well, second half, we won by a couple of points, and it really was a game in two halves. Tipperary in the first half, Kildare in the second half. We just happened to have that little bit of a margin of, you know, in our side at the end. It was terrific.
And what did you say to those girls at half time? I know the heads might have been down, so what were you able to say to get them back out?
Well, it was just a case of know what you can do, believe in yourself, have the character to step up, and remember what you've been doing all year. These girls have been together since November in trials, training flat out since January. So we knew we had it in them. It was just a matter of could we get it out today? And there was nothing more we could do. It was up to them, and we saw it. They went and did it. It was terrific.
It was a fine display from Tara Rafferty. She really kept Kildare in the opening half and got that just desserts when the goal that sent you ahead.
She kept us going. She kept us in it. She was outstanding. Herself, and it was the Manute contingent, Aoife Milan with a goal in the second half. And really, Tara kept the scoreboard ticking over for us when nothing else was going our way. So we owe her the debt. We knew we were playing into a slight breeze, but we took no account of that. We had girls know where they're shooting from ordinarily. We took no account of that. And by the time we got the message on, it was nearly half time. So we had to readjust then, knowing we had the slight breeze in the second half, and we could shoot from that range, and we saw the benefit of that with the breeze behind us.
A lot of celebrations are going to be had tonight.
Yeah, well, we're heading off from here for a few cocktail sausages down in Kilcullen GA Club. And after that, well, the weekend could be a long one.
Yeah, it was a fantastic win for the under 16 girls, and well done to Pat Travers from Leixlip, Brian Coughlin from Leixlip, Amy Horan, Ballymore Eustace, the three coaches there, as well as Mag Keeley, the female liaison officer, and the mentors and Mayor Ishkas, Frank Byrne, Aisling Travers, Sean Flood, Fiona O'Sullivan, Maeve Caffrey, Lily O'Connor, and Lily Malarkey. And we have to give a mention to all of those girls that were on the panel last night. Sophie Knightley in Leixlip, Julie Brannigan, Ballina, Zara Hurley, Kilcullen, Heidi Lyons, 2 Mile House, Laura Dunlea, Raheens, Niamh Murphy, Milltown, Maeve McDonough, Maynooth, Bevan Hughes, Rathcoffey, Anya McNally, Rathcoffey, Aoife Murnan, Maynooth, Abby Whelan, Castle Mitchell, Abby Cahill, Eadstown, Cuiva Egan, Kilcullen, Hannah Murphy, Suncroft, Tara Rafferty, Maynooth, Lauren De Courcy, Kilcullen, Grace Mountain, Sarsfields, Maya Pardy of Kill, Emer Behan, Rathcoffey, Anya Travers, Leixlip, Emma Walsh, St. Lawrence's, Casey Noon, Maynooth, Emma Dock, Doherty, Leixlip, Sive, Buckley, Maynooth, Brianna, Abbey, Kildangan, Nerney, Saoirse Mahon, Rathangan, Sarah Bradley, Leixlip, Rowan Matthews, Selbridge, Cuiva Keegan of Confey, and Holly Telford, Leixlip. Well done, All-Ireland champions.